What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that goes to extra time every time. On this week's show, about last night, we reflect on Tuesday's action as Charlton do a win. There's previews, a basement battle in Yorkshire, Carlisle on the brink, and don't call it a derby. We'll scout a Brazilian swan called Ronald, and more besides. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. How you doing, listener? Hope you're well. We're back with you with another show. It is the Dream Team, me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined by Sam Parkin from home. How are you doing, Sam?
Morning, Matt. Very good, thank you.
I am at home as well. Adrian Clarke is at the Arsenal. Tell us more, Clarky.
I'm currently sat in a gallery, the broadcast gallery, deep in the depths of the Emirates Stadium. I could get called up any moment to go and interview three players. So, I think I'm supposed to have Jorginho, Smith Rowe and Fabio Vieira. Hopefully we'll get through the pod before I get the call up. So I'm kind of risking it here, but it's fun. I like it.
Yeah, and we will find out what Jorginho thinks about Forest Green's chances of survival, no doubt. That's going to lead us on to our opening gambit in a second. But first, let me tell you about the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers at sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18 plus and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, opening gambit time then, given that Clarkie is at Arsenal waiting to interview some players, but still has to do this podcast because he's a dedicated broadcast professional. I wanted to know, when have you been doing something football related, but your mind was on something else football related? So Clarkie, this is you now, basically. So you've got to be careful that you don't confuse your Jorginhos with your Jorginho routers.
This is true. Yeah, it is a little bit distracting, but we'll wing it. There's one other occasion that really springs to mind. It was 17th of May, 2014. So nearly 10 years ago. I was doing co-coms for local BBC radio on the League Two playoff semi-final, Southend against Burton, managed by Gary Rowett at the time. And I also had tickets for the FA Cup final later that day. And basically, I was bricking it throughout the game. What if it goes to extra time and pens? I'm going to miss the kickoff of the FA Cup final. So there we were. They were 1-0 down from the first leg. Southend lead 2-1 until the 69th minute. And I'm thinking, here we go. This is a bit of a nightmare. I won the third Southend goal. And of course, Burton score. And they knock Southend out. And then at the final whistle, just legged it basically to the train with my boy Crawford, who was only about 13 at the time, 12 or 13. And we basically legged it to every train, every connection, and we did get to Wembley. I think just about when they were doing a bide with me. So we made it just in the nick of time. It was fantastic. Great day. Apart from Southend losing. Great cup final, that one. Probably one of the best cup finals, I reckon. Has to go down as one of the best, doesn't it? Arsenal against Hull City, 2-0 down. Won it 3-2, of course.
Curtis Davis, friend of the pod. On target, if I do recall. Sam, what you got for me?
I think you two have probably been in this situation a few times, taking gigs and not really thinking about the clashes and the circumstances that may arise. So when I was working on MLS, I took a couple of games, would have been right at the end of the season in the summer months. And it was the year, one of them, when England very nearly made the World Cup final. So I was booked to work on World Cup final day, corresponding time with the final. And I was the only Englishman that was slightly relieved when Croatia came back to win that semi-final. So it meant I missed France v Croatia. And I didn't learn my lesson because I also missed the Gareth Bale overhead kick Champions League final against Liverpool for the same reason. So in case there's any employers listening to me, I still took my prep and my job very, very seriously, but quite hard to do when like everyone in the building and every screen in the building either had the World Cup final or the Champions League final on while I was doing Rail Salt Lake against Chicago Fire.
How's the MLS putting on games when it's the World Cup final? I mean, that's just nonsense.
I know. Incredible, isn't it? Champions League final, yeah, kind of understand. But the World Cup final was, and I watched that semi-final in Chiswick. And obviously, Kieran Trippier give England the lead, if memory serves me right. And I'm like jumping around.
Would you have swerved the gig, though? That's the question.
I think it would have worked out that I could have watched the first maybe half or first hour. And I think I was resigned to that fact, actually. But that is kind of once in a lifetime. What it will be, won't it, if England make one World Cup final in our lifetime. I think we'd all take that, wouldn't we? So the thought of missing that with my mates was like killing me.
Well, luckily, sort of, you didn't have to. I was going to say mine similar, but you're talking about England in a World Cup final, and I'm talking about Forrest getting smashed by Stoke at home. I was actually commentating at the same time of this game with Sam's predecessor, Clive Walker, my co-commentator then at Chelsea TV. So this is July 2020. So we're deep in the midst of COVID ball. Football's only just come back. So Clive and I can't even be in the ground or in the same room. We're in separate booths. Chelsea are in the middle of losing 5-3 at Liverpool. And Forrest, you remember this well. All they needed to do was not get thrashed at home by Stoke. What did they do? They lost 4-1. And we could communicate with one another. And every time a goal went in, Clive was taking great joy in telling me that Forrest were losing. I was having to try and commentate at the same time. Not very much fun, as I recall. Missy Sabri Lamouchi. But yeah, that was what did for you. Not good. Hopefully, Clarkie's not going to suffer any kind of similar fate. I think it's a much easier balance, but we are enjoying the jeopardy that it's injecting into this pod, albeit it means we've got to whip through it. So let's get to last night's action. I mean, we call it last night. You might call it Tuesday, listener. A tip of the hat to Leicester for knocking out Bournemouth and Blackburn for taking Newcastle all the way to penalties in the FA Cup. But it's the league stuff that we're really interested in. And it finally happened. Charlton done a win, a big one as well. They came from behind to beat Derby County 2-1 at Pride Park. I mean, they're now 4 points above the drop zone, albeit having played twice more than Cheltenham and Port Vale. Derby stay second, but only on goal difference. And third place Bolton have a game in hand on them. Massive win, Sam. We spoke last week about how maybe the fact that Charlton had some difficult looking fixtures was not the worst thing for Nathan Jones as he gets to know his squad. But this is a hugely impressive way to get your first victory since November.
Yeah, what a win. What a celebration. Nathan Jones, reminiscent of him when he got in the stand at Swansea, I think it was last night. I thought he was over the hoardings for a minute there at Pryor Park. Yeah, brilliant victory, 5 points from three of the toughest games in that division. And now, with respect, Northampton away in 11th position and then three of the bottom four in a row. So he's navigated that brilliantly. Just the feel-good factor that's been vacant at the Valley for so long, it is really back. And yeah, he's done a brilliant job in a short space of time to turn things around. Two youngsters, Kanu with his pace for both goals, and Anderson, 19-year-old midfielder, his first goal in the league, profiting from a couple of really bad Derby individual errors. So brilliant night for them. And despite, you know, their precarious position in the league, and if Clarkie would concur, I can't see them getting dragged into real danger now. I think that 4-point cushion will probably grow, and a club who have got a lot wrong off the pitch. I think that's a brilliant decision to get someone with such experience and such quality into the dugout at this difficult time. So I think they will escape, and they'll escape by a distance now.
There's just so much sort of energy about Nathan, isn't there? I just think he brings that to his teams. The supporters have bought in already because they're just seeing a team that's fighting more, that's showing a lot more aggression. He's a decent organiser as well. You know, you don't become as successful as he was at Luton about knowing how to set up a team. And he's got a lot of faith, in fairness to him, Nathan, in young players. You mentioned him there. I think Karori Anderson was a little bit lost under Appleton, who's another coach that's not afraid to use youngsters. But yeah, he's a star man at the minute. Thierry Small as well, at wing back, as well as Carnu. They're all 19. And he's trusted them to do a job in these big games. You know, Bolton, Portsmouth and Derby. 5 points is absolutely magnificent. And yeah, I think there'll be a real belief now that they can sort of clamber up towards lower mid-table. But it's a shocker for Derby, isn't it? What a terrible week for them. Losing at Barnsley, rubbish by all accounts for most of that game. And after dominating the first half, because I don't think Charlton were really at it until the second half in this match. They didn't put the game to bed, and they were made to pay for it. I did look at the team. I don't know what you think, guys. It's like they had Dwight Gale up top on his own, and they had Waghorn, Barkhays and Anne Sibley all on the bench. I just don't know. I don't know about Dwight Gale after he's been out. You know, he's had such little football. Don't know if he's the man to be leading the line on his own.
Well, you mentioned, Clarkie, a few months ago that your concern with Derby was the age profile of the squad. So what did they do about it? They went and signed a 33-year-old who hasn't played all season. So that's a fair criticism, right? And back-to-back defeats, as you say, Paul Warne getting a bit of stick from Derby supporters and Bolton breathing down their neck. It's
I think they sit on leads. I think that's the problem. I think the criticism comes from the tactics, as in once they get themselves into good positions, Derby, they don't put their foot down. They ease off and they go a little bit into safety mode. So they've got to learn to manage games better, I think, Derby, moving forward. So for me, it was a surprise to see them in the top two. I think playoffs is where they'll end up.
Leighton Orient might do so too. They're up to eighth within 5 points of said playoffs after they beat Blackpool by 1-0. Ollie O'Neill got it. I feel a bit smug about this one, Clarkie, because we said a couple of weeks ago, oh, we haven't given Richie Wellens and Leighton Orient enough praise of late. Well, they've won 10 from 15 now, and maybe they can pinch a playoff berth.
I think they can. It's 8 wins from 12 is the stat I got in front of me. You look at the form table over the last 10 games and over the last 12 games, which is a good chunk of the season, Leighton Orient are top. They've been phenomenal in recent times, and we've not really been talking about them that much. They've had injuries as well. You know, lost a few of their forwards in particular. Satiri, who's having to do a job up front at the moment. So I think that they're the epitome of a team. You know, they're hardworking, good energy, a little bit of quality sprinkled throughout the side. They fight for each other. They play at a good tempo through the thirds. And yeah, they're flying, and they deserve to beat Blackpool. I think it was a poor first half, and then in the second half, they sort of ground them down with their quality. And Ollie O'Neill, good young player that they snapped up not so long ago. 3 goals, 2 assists in his last 4 games from the left wing. And the bits I saw of this game, he was heavily involved in all the good bits. And for Orient, looking at the running, they've only got 3 of the top 8 left to play. They've got 4 mid-table teams. They've got 4 teams that are down there in the relegation battle. So if we do see slip-ups from the likes of Stevenage or Oxford, then the O's might nip in there.
But Blackpool might not, Sam. Didn't manage a shot on target in this game after scoring 4 at Bolton at the weekend. We mentioned how limp they were in the Football League Trophy semi-final last week as well. This is a real problem for consistency for Neil Critchley.
Yeah, there is, but I think he's a good coach. I think they've still got an outside chance of the playoffs. As you said, they won well and won well recently against a good side. I think this is, you know, a kind of a nod to the tactical awareness of Richie Wellens, the understanding of his squad more than, you know, Blackpool being poor. I think Blackpool without the ball were pretty good in the first half, well set up, and it meant that Leighton Orient, those ethoses that Clarkie just spoke of, they had to kind of throw that out the window a little bit last night and play for second balls and be direct. And they've got so many technical, good kind of diminutive players, forward players in particular. They lack really the strong kind of number 9 types at the moment that are in form. So to see them playing slightly more direct and slightly more robust probably doesn't play to their strengths necessarily, but they got the job done last night. And I think that shows that they're not kind of precious in the way that they set up. They're not one dimensional. And that Richie Wellens, you know, having spent a bit of time with him, I really like him. I like the way he comes across. I watched his interview in full because you just can't not. There's always drama when he's speaking. He actually walked off mid-answer last night when he was on one about managers and officials and the way he keeps getting yellow carded and sent off and what have you. But, you know, it was a job well done. And just on that Ollie O'Neill point, Theo Archibald, I think, yeah, for my money, he's probably their most exciting attacking player. So to have him missing and replace him with someone who didn't have any experience of the EFL, and what did Clarkie say, I think 5 goal involvements in 5 games. I mean, that's an incredible recruitment to have someone who didn't have the experience come in and add them that goal threat, because continuously they seem to survive and punch above their weight late in Orient without having loads of goal threat in their side. So another great win, and we'll see how they can get on. 5 points off the playoffs now. They've got a great opportunity.
Yeah, I think Brandon Cooper was a good pickup. Obviously, they got him on loan from Swansea. They made that permanent in Jan. So I think he was particularly good in this game. Going to set you a challenge, Sam. I know you half know Richie. Just got to get him on the show. Such good value. See, I'm going to set you that challenge, mate.
I think he's worried about getting fined off the FA at the moment. So, like, could he do half an hour of us? You know what I mean? And and not offend anyone.
We can coach him. We coach him through it. And the good thing, we can edit it, can't we? Any of the dodgy bits.
Mutually beneficial. Yeah. Call it some broadcast training for him. Let's head into League Two. A big win for Sutton at Meadow Lane, where Stuart Maynard's sticky start continues. 4-3 was the score here. Charlie Lakin's penalty won it for Sutton. 4 points from safety. They had 17 shots at this game. And Adrian, it's a really good night for them, wasn't it, Tuesday? Not just because they won, but because Forest Green conceded that stoppage time equaliser against Wrexham as well. It's still maybe a long shot stretching it a little bit, but it's still odds against them surviving at this point. But boy, they needed that win.
Oh, no, it's massive. Absolutely huge. And yeah, with Grimsby and Colchester not exactly convincing at the moment, I think the bottom two are looking to reel them in. And look, I mean, everyone seems to be able to score against Notts County, don't they? So I don't know how much of a gauge this was. And they were gifted a really bad goal. I mean, Aidan Baldwin for the second goal. I mean, it's one of the worst back passes I've ever seen. Very incredibly sloppy. And they made him pay. And ultimately, that was the one that gave them 3 points instead of one. Great run from Lakin, by the way, to win the penalty. It was slalom dribble. And it was a lazy challenge, actually, from Dan Crowley, who'd scored a worldie to make it three apiece. So it was sort of a night of mixed fortunes for Dan Crowley. I think it's huge for Sarton. And it'll give them that belief, won't it, that they can go to other places and win. I mean, Notts County, you've got to sort out the defence. I think it feels way too premature to be coming after the manager, Stuart Maynard. He's got to be able to bring in his own players and be given an opportunity to revamp that defence. Got to be. But it's not a great start, is it? But they have had a tough run of games. I think Mansfield, Gillingham, Wrexham and Crewe all in the last few games. So a little bit, I think we just need to ease off of the criticism on Maynard and let him sort out the long-standing flaws the Notts County have had, because they've been leaking too many goals ever since they got promoted.
Are you writing them off, Sam, as playoff contenders now or not? So only 4 points from it, albeit they're down in 14th. But as Clarkie says, their form is not that of a team who look like they're going to be extending their season come May.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think they're going to make it. I think that, considering it's the first time they've lost three consecutive home games since 2016, I think the supporters, the way the game is these days, will be questioning the new manager. I think that's inevitable. One win in seven, lost five out of seven. With the same group of players, they've got worse offensively and defensively. If it was possible, have got even poorer. So they need a victory, especially at Meadow Lane, sooner rather than later. Otherwise, there's going to be huge criticism for the new manager. Just on Sutton, what you said when you kicked off, Matt, 17 attempts last night, 50 attempts over the last three games. So I think this has maybe been coming. They've had 11 games since the start of January. I noted six draws, 5-1-1s. So they've been in every game until recently. And he's changed the shape, Steve Morrison. It's kind of a 3-4-1-2 they've been playing. And last night they got their reward for having a bit more of a go, I would say. They've been forever a 4-4-2. And if ever you were going to have an opportunity to make opportunities and put the defensive unit under pressure, it was going to be Notts County the way that they're conceding. So, yeah, credit to Sutton United. And now, I don't know if you'd looked at the fixtures, it's Grimsby v Forest Green this weekend. So Sutton will be desperate for the draw there. Sutton go to Tranmere and then they play Grimsby, which I think's midweek at home. So by then, they could have 100% reeled Grimsby back into this battle with Forest Green Rovers. So one victory, all of a sudden, I thought Sutton were done, to be honest, about a fortnight ago. great opportunity now to get Grimsby back into the mix and survive.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating down there. Other end of the League Two table, Walsall, another side making a late run for the playoffs. Emmanuel Adeboyega's 85th minute winner gave them a fourth win on the spin. They came from behind to beat Accrington. Clarkey, we've established by now that I love a shot count. Walsall had 26 in this match, but only 5 of them on target. So thrilled to get the victory, of course, but maybe a bit of shooting practice going on ahead of the weekend.
But I think it just shows how confident they are as a team. That's 4 straight wins now for Walsall. And yeah, they're playing to their strengths. They've got a lot of tall players. Jamil Mount, obviously, up front is great in the air. They brought Mo Fowle off the bench, 6'5". The centre-half, Adeboyega, scored 3 and 4. Both goals from corners in this game, by the way. Scored a lot of set-piece goals also this season. But yeah, the fans are loving it. I think we talk, don't we, so often about connections between managers, players and the crowd. And it feels for ages that Walsall haven't really had much of a connection. It's been a conveyor belt of different gaffers, different styles of play, different players revolving door at the Bescot. But with Matt Sadler, I think your local lads, they're starting to see some really attacking football. They're taking the game to opponents. Not always possession heavy, but they're really creating a lot. And they're buying into it. And I think that they've got real momentum now. Obviously, Isaac Hutchinson, who I saw at Southend a few years ago, he came through and didn't really make it at Southend, but he's the star of the show for Walsall. 10 goals, 8 assists this year. And he's the set piece taker. So great deliveries for those 2 goals. So yeah, look, Walsall, I think they're in the mix in terms of making a late run, not a million miles away. So yeah, let's keep your eye on them. But yeah, it feels like something's building there, and I'm quite pleased for the Walsall fans, because how long ago is it since Walsall had much to get enthused about? So yeah, I think this is a good moment for them. I know you'll like that turn of phrase, Matt.
Yeah, I'm pleased for them. But there's a part of me that just thinks, because Matt Sadler's obviously a mate of mine, he was getting pelters early of the season. Absolute pelters when they crept past Alverton. I covered the first leg, which was 0-0, and they got through 1-0 in the replay. And they wanted him gone. And it's just like a really good, honest guy. He's a brilliant professional. He's a bright chap as well, making his way in the Football League. You need a little bit of time. He's got experienced people around him as well, in terms of the coaching staff. So they had horrendous injuries, and I think they're still experiencing them now. Donovan Daniels, I remember talking to him around that FA Cup game, was his best player who's been missing, and Farkas and the other centre-half not available. So this is very much a makeshift back three, containing 2 loanees and a young lad, Taylor Allen, who's not played much football this season there. So patched up. And Clarkey's point about Jamil Matt as well. I remember speaking to Sads about him as well, and saying that, you know, he needs a little bit looking after. He's coming towards the tail end of his career. He's come back in for the last 5. They've won 4, drawn the other. He's involved in goals, and it gives them that opportunity to be a bit more direct, get 2 up front. And my goodness me, all of a sudden, they look like a really, really good side with loads of different ingredients. And the fans last night, I mean, I haven't heard noise or seen like an atmosphere behind that home end for many a year at the stadium. So, really pleased for him, and got half a chance now, haven't they?
Certainly looks that way. League Two is just fascinating, top to bottom, isn't it? Can't take your eyes off it. It's going to be a really fun run in. All right, that was midweek. We're going to have a look ahead to some of the weekend's games next. To borrow a phrase from Forrest Gump, West Brom and Friday nights go together like peas and carrots. This week, the Baggies back under the lights of the Hawthorns as they welcome Coventry in their 5th Friday night fixture of the season. It is 5th. Versus 9th. West Brom, Sam, first home game since they lost to Southampton on a Friday, of course. Where are we at with them at the moment? We're full of praise for Carlos Corberan. We're thinking they're playoff stick-ons, are we?
I think so. Yeah, I suppose the biggest conundrum for him at the moment is how to balance the kind of forward line, with DK obviously out long-term now. And
oh, that was gutting, wasn't it? Seeing him off the pitch in tears with another ruptured Achilles.
Yeah, I didn't like the involvement of the golf buggy there either. I thought there'd be more dignified ways.
Not dignified for DK, right.
Just hobble off with your one arm on the shoulder of the physio is the way I styled it in my Portman Road injury day woes. So yeah, that was a bit weird. Yeah, so Thomas Asante out as well at the moment. I think he went with Jed Wallace down the middle the other day, and you've got obviously Johnson from Celtic and Fellows, the young lad who's done really well either side. So kind of going to have to go without maybe a recognised striker again this week. The thing I noted about West Brom's chances, they've only got one game left against anyone in the top seven, and that comes 20th of April at Leicester, the league leaders. So they've got a pretty kind run and don't play anyone above ninth after Coventry in the next nine games. So this is a brilliant opportunity to rack up some points in the next kind of month, and then probably just, I wouldn't say take your foot off the gas, but be secure in the knowledge that you're going to be in the playoffs and maybe have an opportunity to plan for that a little bit earlier. They won quite comfortably, if memory serves, at Coventry early part of the season. And they're strong at home, really strong at home. Fell to Southampton relatively recently, but I would expect them to continue in that vein in front of the home fans. And with 5 points between the two, I'd say this is a massive weekend for Coventry, especially with Preston and Hull playing each other. It's a great opportunity to tighten that gap and kind of rule out some other teams' chances who are kind of still in the mix, but are looking for incredible runs to the end of the season for themselves.
What about Coventry then, Clarky? You saw them live and in living colour on Monday night as they made light work of Maidstone. Only two defeats in their last 19 in all comps. Some most welcome goals for Ellis Sims and 4 points off the playoffs, and been in a sort of replica of last season in a lot of ways, hasn't it? Started poorly, got a bit better, went bad again. Now they're good again. That's my analysis. Yeah. What's yours?
They're good enough for the playoffs, no doubt about it. But a lot of the teams are coming into a decent run of form, like Hull, for example. Norwich as well have come from deep, haven't they? But no, I was impressed with them. Their attitude was great. They were super sharp against Maidstone. It's hard to tell, isn't it, when the opposition is 95 places below you in the pyramid. But I did like the energy of the team, and I thought they moved it really quickly. Casey Palmer was pretty much unplayable, especially in the first half. Absolutely superb he was. And then, of course, in the second half, Callum O'Hare come off the bench. And I was thinking, right, how do you get these two in the same team? Because I think that they are two excellent players. And I think what's going to happen is that they'll probably stick with a 4-2-3-1. And with Sakamoto out, they might stick Casey Palmer in one of the wide roles and then slide him in to play at the top of that box that he loves so much, Mark Robbins. He likes to have that box midfield, and you could have here O'Hare and Palmer just there. So it might be a little bit of an imbalanced Coventry lineup, but then that might be the way to go. The problem they might have is that West Brom are pretty solid with the two very defensive central midfielders patrolling in front of the back four. So tactically, it's going to be a really interesting battle, I think. Can Coventry get those two guys in the game? I thought Sims looked good. He looked leaner, and there was some smart finishes in there. Victor Torp, really like the look of him. He's the new central midfielder. Elegant, good left foot. So, yeah, he's a player to look out for. It looks like another smart piece of recruitment. So, yeah, look, I think this will be a close game, close fought game. Coventry have a shot at it, no doubt about it.
Another close fought game, potentially, as Rotherham take on Sheffield Wednesday, maybe not. Last weekend, QPR, Huddersfield, Millwall all picked up big wins in the relegation fight. Sheffield Wednesday also earning a crucial victory as they saw off Bristol City this weekend. The Owls making the short trip across Yorkshire to take on an already doomed looking Rotherham. This is a really tough gig, isn't it, for Rotherham for the rest of the season, Sam? 16 points adrift. I mean, they're doomed, aren't they? How do you even motivate this group of players for the rest of the campaign?
Well, I think you motivate them for this one because it'll be a massive crowd. Certainly the away seating will be full to the brim. So you've got to try and motivate them with the derby factor here. And I think it will galvanise them for this game, for that reason, and also because the last two performances have been okay. I think they're having a bit more of a go. I think the new signings, or certainly the changes in the team with Klukas and Rinomota, the two up top, they've got obviously three really physical strikers in Nombe, Eves and Hugill to choose from. They outshot Ipswich. I think they were so unfortunate not to get anything there. Created loads of problems for them. And in the first half at QPR, they were really on the front foot and maybe could have been further ahead. So I think there's been signs from those last two performances that they have got it in them to rally. The problem is clearly the form is disastrous. I think we all felt that maybe it was a kind of appointment with a view to next season for Liam Richardson. But with one win in 22, I just think the animosity towards the owner and the manager and the unhappiness at the way that the season's playing out, that could all take its toll. And maybe they'd have to consider changing again. I think that's probably where we are with them, because they've not rallied. 6 points from 45 under the new manager. It looks like their fate is sealed. So that'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on, what happens off the pitch here. I know Sheffield Wednesday are in much better fettle, but I kind of fancy Rotherham to get something, possibly a draw. That would be my guess.
What they'll have to do, Clarkie, if they are going to get a positive result, is keep Ike Ugbo quiet. This is a really interesting one, I think. So he's got 5 goals in his last 4 games. He spent the first half of the season on loan at Cardiff, where he only got 4. But he might end up keeping Sheffield Wednesday up. They're on a bit of a Danny roll at the moment.
Oh, no, believe me, they will be singing that song, Danny roll. They can't get enough of that at the moment, the Owls fans. It's yeah, they're loving Ugbo. He's a bit of a cult hero. When I saw him recently, he played on the right, and Pervada kind of played number 10, and then they'd have a little swap up at times, and he'd then come and join in with Kadamata as the centre forward. Well, in the last 2 games, because he's been scoring, I guess they've just stuck Ugbo down the middle in a 5-4-1. They've gone with a back 5 last couple, and he's been very, very good. I think well supported by Pervada and Musaba, who have been bright out wide. Pervada, I think, has lifted the team. He's energised Sheffield Wednesday. I still think against footballing teams, and this won't be a footballing game, I don't think, as Sam was alluding to, but we're pretty direct from all parties. I think against footballing teams, Bannon and Volks as a midfield 2 might not be enough with those 2 wide players sort of stretching play. So, but in this game, it won't matter. And I think, yeah, I think they'll go there with confidence, won't they? You know, they've 3 wins in 4. The game management's been much better. The defending has been considerably better in recent matches as well. They seem to have found that formula with a 3 centre-halves. So I think they will go there and absolutely target the 3 points. I don't think they'll see a draw as a good result here, Sheffield Wednesday. It's like, let's eliminate Rotherham from the equation and let's pile that pressure on the likes of Stoke and Huddersfield and QPR around us. I think they'll go there and potentially win.
Yeah, certainly wouldn't bet against it. We will look ahead to some League One and League Two games shortly, but next we're going to do a scouting report. I'm really looking forward to this one, Adrian. We're sticking with the Championship. It is a player, and I probably shouldn't say this as a host of a Football League podcast, but it is a player that I had literally not heard of until you said you were going to do a scouting report on him. So tell me more about a Brazilian in Wales called Ronald.
First things first, he's not Ronald. He's Ronald.
Okay.
McDonald. Yeah. Well, but this is why he does the Sue celebration from Ronaldo, you see. So, just think Ronald for Ronaldo. Yeah, saw him live in the Swansea game against Leeds, and Swansea were outclassed massively on the night. But this kid who's come over from Brazil, Grêmio, where he did have that, you know, I think a lot of his experience was in the second division of Brazilian football, actually.
A bit disrespectful to his loan spell at Estrela Amadora in Portugal, where he was earlier this season. I think he lit up the Taça da Liga in his appearance against Portimonense.
Anyway, from what I saw of him, he looked really confident. Like every time he got the ball against Leeds, it's a tough game, he just wanted to go past his player. He's one of those wide players that he doesn't necessarily have that much tricks. You know, he's not all about the quick feet and the lollipops and the scissors or whatever you want to call them. He's a drop the shoulder, go on the outside kind of guy. And he's direct, he's quick, and he wants to test players and get in behind them. And he did really well. He won a few corners that night and looked a threat. Well, since then, he's got better and better. He scored 2 great goals at Sunderland, proving that he can be a finisher, you know, 2 really strong right-footed strikes. He'll track back and get stuck in as well, which I think is excellent. Not someone that's going to be in the game a lot. He's not someone who links play. But if you can get it to him, he'll go past the player and shoot, or he'll go past the player and whip it across the face of goal, like he did for a chance for Plaqueta at the Stadium of Light, who really should have scored at the weekend. So, yeah, look, seeing him on home turf made me think this guy's a fan's favourite. They really, really like his positivity, the energy that he brings. And obviously now that he's scored a couple of goals, I think that he's become a real cult hero. So, yeah, for me, he's a bit raw. I don't know whether I see him as being top tier in terms of the future in regards to going to play in the Premier League. But in the here and now, for a team that want to play football, and we know Swansea want to play football, what they maybe lack is that edge. They lack that penetration, that pace, directness to slice through teams. Well, Ronald provides it. So, yeah, keep your eye on him between now and the end of the season. I think he'll do all right.
There you go. If you didn't know much about him before, you've just been educated. You could say, Ronald. We'll get back to previews next, specifically League One. Where Reading go to Carlisle, hoping for 3 points to put them back in credit for the two they were docked this week as Dai Young continues his mission to make Reading die young. Let's start with the home side, though. Carlisle, Sam. I mean, I want to say massive win for them on Tuesday away to Burton, but does it change that much, really? They're 13 points from safety, but it stops the rot, doesn't it? They had lost 8 on the bounce. Credit to them for sticking with Paul Simpson, the man who got them up, but it hasn't really worked this time around.
I'm not sure the supporters would maybe share your sentiment. I think he's been coming in for a little bit of criticism throughout the season, understandably. It actually, doing a bit of reading last night, just took me back to the back end of last season when I spoke to him after the playoff final, when I was obviously quite buoyant and maybe got a little bit carried away and said, you've got the potential to, you know, kick on again next year in League One, haven't you, with a support base and, you know, everyone on side and all that. And he just kind of like tempered my thought process immediately with like, well, think we'll just have to try and stay in the division. And, you know, that was his response immediately. And it kind of took me aback a little bit because I did think, I mean, Clarkie played there briefly, but I did think it's an area in the club that if you got it going properly, people would really buy in. But they've obviously found it incredibly difficult this year. Had the US takeover and obviously he has been backed in January. I think they brought 7 in and some names that, you know, we would have talked about on the podcast over the last few seasons. Josh Vella's come in, Harry Lewis, the goalkeeper. Jack Diamond obviously had a problem off the pitch at Sunderland, but you would think those guys would be quality additions at this level. So I think they've got the potential to pick up some results between now and the end of the season, but it's not going to be enough for them. 28 games without a clean sheet until last night. I mean, I played in some bad teams, but I don't think I ever went 28 games without getting a shutout, which is just incredible. And last night, they kind of went back to the back three, and he had Huntington and Lavelle. Those two actually, I have no idea whose goal it was. I've watched it about 5 times. I think it comes off both of them. So, I think both kind of centre-halves ran off celebrating. But my point being, I think they went for a side last night that could deal with the aerial kind of bombardment that came their way from Burton. Loads of long throws and set-piece deliveries. So Paul Simpson has actually been playing with a bit more possession the last few games, probably because of that influx of quality additions in the window. I think that was probably a kind of nod to the past in terms of his setup last night, but it got the job done, defended really well. And if they can continue keeping clean sheets, there'll be some more points for them, some more victories, but it's been a really disappointing season for them and fascinating, a bit like Rotherham, as to whether they stay with Paul Simpson next year in the basement tier.
Reading, Clarkie, would probably take their season being labelled as disappointing, wouldn't they? Because it could be far, far worse than that. Another points deduction for them this week. Now a place and 3 points above the relegation zone. And their recent good form has dipped a little bit, hasn't it? 1-4. So this is an interesting game for them too.
Would have been drawn in, haven't they, by that points deduction. They're sort of a lot less safe than they were. It's a joke, isn't it? What's going on there? Again, you know, players are done great to be able to concentrate. It was disappointing losing at home to Shrewsbury. I didn't see that one coming. Aziz, who's been great, and a Hibishman, weren't great out wide. They're the sort of two that really make things happen for them. It's good to see Sam Smith score. I think he's had a bit of a drought lately, so he's back in the goals. But yeah, this is the kind of match Reading have been losing all season. Weirdly, they've kind of been inspired by the toxic atmosphere at their own ground. They've won 9 games at home, but only 2 away. It's the second worst record. I think 11 points overall. It's not great. And I looked at their record away to teams below them, and it's shocking. 4 defeats and 2 draws. Haven't beaten anyone on the road that's beneath them yet. So, I give Carlisle a chance here. They'll have to be better, Reading, than they were against the Shrews. But they are taking, I'm hearing, £1,300, which is pretty good effort. So it should be a good atmosphere. And on that with Sam, I was at Carlisle in one of their sort of darker periods. So they were really struggling to get crowds. But I played against them when they had Matt Janssen and Rory Delap. It was kind of a little bit of a golden era for them back in the sort of, I don't know, late 90s. That terrace on the side there, when they pack that out, it's lively. It's quite an intimidating place to play. So yeah, it's a good club. It really is. It's just been a flat season for them. But yeah, I think they've got a chance of beating Reading here.
We shall find out at the weekend. In League Two, it's Wimbledon versus MK Dons. It might not be a derby. It might be a battle of good versus evil, depending on your proclivities, or it might just be a football match between two teams who want to be in a higher division next season. The decision is yours. Talk to me about Wimbledon, Adrian. Only 2 wins in their last 10 matches. They probably always see this one as a must-win game, but it actually is in terms of their hopes for getting a playoff place, isn't it?
It's huge. I expected a really raucous atmosphere. We know about the history. They obviously had 2 players sent off as well at Stadium MK, so that would be fresh in their minds. And it's a huge game in terms of their sort of fading playoff hopes. I feel a bit sorry for Jacko. I mean, he's been getting a little bit of stick over team selection, I think, and some of the substitutions he's been making. But he has lost a few players as well. So he lost Alamadi, who's, bailed them out on numerous occasions with key goals. I think his first choice centre-backs are out as well. And they were guys that played from the back. And I think that the key to their success earlier on in the season was playing through the thirds, not being, overly direct, and they had good energy about them. But now the replacements aren't quite as good. And I think as a consequence, they've started to boom it a little bit and they don't really have the players. I mean, Bugle can hold the ball up, but the guy they got in, I think Josh Kelly from Solihull Moors, is not the biggest. He's more of a, sharp player that's quick and that wants to link up and run in beyond. Josh Kelly was prolific for Solihull, but he hasn't scored in 6 games for the Dons, 6 games, no goals. He's been taken off quite early in a few of those, so they're not really playing to his strengths. Ronan Curtis is the one that surprises me. He's not sort of in and out of the team at the minute. And James Tilley, obviously we did a scouting report on him earlier in the season when he was flying, absolutely flying, wasn't he? He'd scored 8 goals in his first 12 games this season, well, 2 goals in his last 20. And both those goals came in the same game against Oxford. So look, it's a cocktail of things that have sort of seen Wimbledon just dip from where they were earlier on in the season. The form of star players, the loss of key men, and maybe, maybe not using the players that they got to their best of late. But, it's a big game. They'll be flying for this. Really, really up for it. And they have tended to raise their game against the better teams at home this season. They did beat Mansfield at home. They drew with Crewe and Wrexham. They beat Bower as well. So, yeah, I think this is going to be lively.
MK Dons, Sam, nicely tucked in the playoffs. 7-point buffer between they and the Chasers. But they've got a tough march coming up. Mansfield, Salford, Crewe and Stockport amongst the teams they'll face. So it's not cut and dried, I guess, and that they'll finish in the playoffs. And they'll want something from this game for that reason, if not for the fact that, these are two clubs who don't particularly care for one another.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they've matured throughout the season, obviously, with Mike Williamson into, a really good-looking team, very good side. Obviously, dominate the ball, quite similar to, the previous managers at MK Dons over the last few years. They're absolutely steamrolling teams early. In games, they were 3-0 up in the corresponding fixture here, which was relatively recently, 23rd of January. They battered Newport last time out at Stadium MK. Again, 3 goals very early on in that game. Got 2 inside the first 10 minutes at Swindon as well. So they're incredible fast starters. I think they've got the most goals in the division in the opening 15 minutes of games. On the flip side, I think Wimbledon are the second best first half team in the division. So that should go some way to counter that. But I think a really nice contrast maybe in styles. They'll look to dominate the ball, as Clarkey says. I think Jacko's maybe been forced. And at times this season, I think he's seen the merits in being a little bit longer, especially when you've got the mobility of the forward players, Tilly's ability to carry up the pitch. I think Davison and Sasu are good athletes as well. So I think they'll try and put them under pressure. They've had a brilliant period in front of their home fans, kind of middle of this season, where they won 5 or 6 on the bounce. So they've shown they're capable. But obviously, if you look at the form of the two sides coming into this one, you would say it's a tougher challenge for the home side. So yeah, but Dan Kemp and Jack Payne and Stephen Wern, this lad who's coming from Gateshead, who Mike Williamson had, all really good diminutive little footballers who look to pick up the ball between the lines and cause problems. And that's all in the absence of Max Dean, who's their top goal scorer and not available at the moment. So I think for the reason you stated, big game for MK Dons, but it right now where it sits, considering they won the reverse fixture as well, I think this is a bigger game for Wimbledon to keep their playoff hopes alive.
All right, it's 12:30 on Saturday for that one. Okay, there are a couple of ways you can help us out. You can give us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. You can tell a friend about us, or you can follow us on social media at EFL What The on X/Twitter, What The EFL on Instagram and TikTok. And don't forget about the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers at sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the pod. It's 18+. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Right, I've rejigged the quiz. So it's now one question each with a tiebreaker. So no fastest finger first. Adrian, here's your question. Which former Rotherham player got both goals for Sheffield Wednesday when they met earlier in the season?
Former Rotherham player?
Yeah, got both goals for Sheffield Wednesday when they met
against
earlier
Rotherham
in the season. Yes.
It's got to be Michael Smith.
It had to be, and it is. Well done. Sam, yours is from a slightly more... What am I looking for here? Yours is a harder question, basically, is what I'm trying to tiptoe around. Which former Malta international bagged a brace when Coventry won 4-2 at West Brom in December 2007? Can't be many Malta internationals that you know.
Yeah, I know it is, but I'm going to butcher his name. Oh, my God. It's Michael... Can I just say it began with an M?
Have a go. Let's see who we can offend.
No, but I just don't remember his surname. I can't remember his surname. Is it Michael Misford or something?
I'm going to give you that. It's Michael Mifsud. So
just got two letters the wrong way around. Yeah, I'll take that.
All right. So the tiebreaker, and Clarkie, you're going to have to switch your camera back on briefly for this, regardless of the impact that it has on the audio quality, because it's going to be a fastest finger first. In what year, and I want a hand up first, in what year did MK Dons and Wimbledon first play each other?
Oh my goodness me.
Okay, Sam, you got your finger up.
I've got no idea. 2014.
Right. I'm gonna play it tactically and say
no, you can't 2013.
Okay, yeah, fine. 2013. The answer.
But I think it was about 2009, personally. But yeah, go. Here we go. Go on.
All right. Well, that's interesting. Because none of those guesses are right. It was 2012, an FA Cup tie. Wimbledon won it thanks to a stoppage time goal from John Otsemabor. We all remember it well. Well, that worked brilliantly, didn't it? I did the tiebreaker. None of you got it right, so nobody wins.
A dishonourable draw.
It was 2 years out. Clarkie was 3 years out, so technically...
No, I said 2013.
Yeah. I'll give you two guesses.
And also, technically, you didn't get Michael Mifsud's name right. So let's just say that everybody lost, including you, listener. So apologies for that. A little bit more tweaking maybe to do to the quiz from me in the future. But that's going to bring us to the end of today's show. Good fun. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with another one next week. Enjoy the football if you're off to a match or if you're just sitting on your sofa and taking it all in. We'll be back with you again same time next week. Bye for now.